Well, wonderful to see so many faces here today, new and old. I'm delighted to introduce Rathia López-Anguita, who's come all the way from Seville. She's a lecturer in the Department of Arabic and Islamic Studies at the University of Seville, and she's currently part of a team of the research project funded by the Spanish government and European funds concerning cultural and religious identity in Sufism in Morocco and Senegal, hagiographies, gender, and symbology. Rathia has been for many years active with Mias Latina, which is a branch of the society based in Spain for Portuguese, Spanish, and Italian speakers. And she has articles published in their journal, Azufre Rojo, the Red Sulphur, as well as in the English Journal of the Mujahideen and Ibn Arabi Society, and also has presentations on the Ibn Arabi YouTube channel if you'd like to hear more from Gracia. Her presentation today is titled Human and Divine Breaths, Mirrors of Creation, Language, and Love. So over to you, Gracia.
Thank you very much, Cecilia. I'm delighted to be here. I want to express my gratitude, of course, to the Mujahideen Ibn Arabi Society, David Hornsby, Richard Twinge. Thank you very much for organizing this wonderful symposium and for inviting me to be in it. Thank you very much to the institution that is hosting us, the Barbour Institute. To me, it's a great opportunity, and I feel very grateful of being here. Being here in this place and having in mind the topic of my talk, which deals on breathing and air and winds, to me, it's inevitable to think about the nymph, which is a recurrent topic in the major work of Abi Barbour, his Atlas Mnemosyne, whose reproduction can be seen here in this library. This nymph or nymphs, because they occur more than one instance in his atlas, it's a female figure always accompanied by a breeze or a wind that may go unnoticed, but which has a deep meaning. The idea of breathing, the air, the wind in Ibn Arabi's thought is very different from that of the nymph of Mnemosyne. But they both share in common the feature of their recurrence in the history of Western art. The nymph is always there, disguised in different ways, but it appears and reappears. And the breath in Ibn Arabi's thought, it is always there in all of his books, in all of his doctrines. It has a more or less obvious presence because the breath of God is omnipresent in the universe according to the cosmological view of Ibn Arabi. Parting from some statements made in chapter 198 from Futuhat, such as the breath of the creatures comes from the divine breath, or the human breath has the same form as that of the merciful, the Rahman, Ibn Arabi shows not only a mirroring between the human and divine breaths, but a coincidence, an identification between both, and also a sort of lineage. Our breath, it's the descendant of God's breath. Parting from this idea, Ibn Arabi explores a whole set of implications related with the act of breathing, such as smelling, blowing, breezes, winds, producing moist, the articulation of language, the act of praising, the dhikr, the continuous creation, the exoteric dialectic, and with love, as we shall see. Although the term used by Ibn Arabi to mean breath is, or the word in Arabic is nafas, alludes not to the complete action of breathing that would be tanafus, inhaling and exhaling, but rather only exhaling. It seems that it could be understood as the whole cycle of breathing, because it is a circular breath that returns to its point of departure. As he asserts in Uqlat al-Mustawfis, the divine breath is both in the beginning of creation and in the final return to God, for the beginning is the same as the return. And also in the same treatise, he says, there is no repetition in what he creates, for the essences of beings, sorry, not the essences, the entities of beings are created anew in an essence to which God gives existence. When he wills it to remain, it remains. And when he wills it to disappear, it disappears with each divine breath. So this also suggests that there is a rhythm in creation related to the inhale-exhale dynamics. He also states that the truth, al-haq, never ceases to create angels through the breath of the worlds that never cease to be exhaled. The word nafas and nafs, soul, are obviously connected. They have the same linguistic root. And actually in chapter 198 from Futuhat, he says that the nafs, the soul, is the entity of the nafas, the breath. And I would like to recall just a few extra Islamic examples of this relation, because the soul since antiquity was conceived as a warm, moist vapor, which was fully observable when it met a shiny surface or a cool air. And a kind of subtle vapor or wind, pneuma, ruach, anima, emanated from the blood, was also conceived by some mystics like such as Santa Teresa of Avila as a kind of vital substance. Saint John of the Cross, also the Spanish mystic, used to refer to it as a spiritual juice, this vapor emanating from our bodies, which carries life within it. The origin of this juice or vapor for a long time was located in the chest, more specifically in the blood surrounding the lungs and concentrated in the heart. We have also the example, an Islamic example, of the story of Hay ben Yaqdhan, written by the Andalusian philosopher Ibn Tufayl from 12th century. In this story, when the mother, who is a doe that's been breastfeeding Hay, dies, Hay ben Yaqdhan dissects her and sees how a vapor emanates from the heart of this doe. And he comes to the conclusion that that must be a kind of vital principle that kept his mother, the doe, alive. The breath is exhaled by God by virtue of his name, the All-Merciful. We hardly find the expression nafas. I haven't found a nafas Allah or nafas Rab. We can find nafas al-haq or nafas ilahi, but most of time, almost always, it is connected with the word, with the divine name Rahman. It's always the nafas al-Rahman, what we find in the text of Ibn Arabi. The scriptural basis for this expression is to be found in the hadith. For example, the hadith that says, a breath from the All-Merciful comes to me from the direction of Yemen, referring to the helpers of Muhammad that were coming from there, which I'll return to this hadith later. Or wind is the mercy, rahmah, of Allah. It brings mercy or punishment. Do not denounce or curse the wind, but ask Allah, the Exalted, for the good of it and seek the protection of Allah from its evil. In these hadiths, The wind is identified with the breath of God and has a sense of relief and assistance, an idea that we will find in other Agbarian texts. In the paradise, according to the text of Ibn Arabi, the breath of the All-Merciful will manifest itself permanently as a wind, rih, called Al-Muthira, the spirited or exciting wind. Ibn Arabi explains this in chapter 65 from Futuhat. The name Rahman is related with giving existence or bringing beings into existence as an act of mercy, Rahma. The name Allah has to do with the internal meaning of divine names, while Rahman has to do with the external form of the names. I'm considering that when we invoke God, we use our own breath and our own letters. What we are really saying are the names of the names of God. It is like a clothing of the names of God. Those names of names that we articulate are also interpreters of the real divine names, whose form is a form given by the breath and speech of Rahman. The names quoted in the scriptures comes from the breath of Rahman, and their spirits, their inner meanings, which cannot be explained according to Ibn Arabi, belongs to Allah, which is beyond the status of Rahman. When we chose invoking Allah, we are making present the inner meaning of names. And when we chose to invoke Rahman, we are paying attention to the external form of the names. But whatever it may be the case, and being or not aware of this distinction, it is only He who we are praising when we praise God. The name Rahman is also related with the action of sitting down on the throne. God is established on the throne with His name Rahman by virtue of His name Rahman. This throne contains below it the whole dome of the universe, and it symbolizes the establishment of God's power and authority, and alludes to the Quranic verse, He is the all-compassionate, Rahman, the one who sits on the throne. This throne comprises the mawjudat, or existent beings, the dust, or prime matter, which is the passive receptacle of the manifestation of the world, nature, the universal body, who is born of the previous two, and is width, length, and depth, this the three dimension of space, and the sphere. Within the creation of the throne, space is created in three dimensions, as I have mentioned. Below the throne, we have the phenomenal world, and above it, the divine transcendence. So Rahman is closely related to the past, from the transcendent to the immanent, related to the manifestation of God through creation. Because every creation from God is a mercy, again, a rahma, even suffering. As he states on chapter 198 from Futuhat, although afflictions may accidentally occur in the world, they are also mercy. It is like the ingestion of an unpleasant medicine. The purpose is not to punish the drinker or to cause him pain, but to return the drinker to his former state of well-being and health. The location, so to speak, the metaphysical location of the breath of the All-Merciful is the cloud. According to a hadith often quoted in the cosmological texts by Ibn Arabi, God was before the creation on a cloud, ama. And this term also appears in at least two instances in the Quran. In Ibn Arabi's cosmological system, it refers, among other things, to the stage prior to creation and to the substance from which it has been created. This cloud is the moist of the divine breath, and it is the entity of that breath. As the hadith continues, above it and below it, below the cloud, there was no air, meaning with this that it is itself the above and the below, and therefore the being of truth and the being of creation. Thus, there is nothing but the breath of the true one, Al-Haq. The cloud constitutes a fundamental concept in Ibn Arabi's metaphysics. As he writes in Uqla, at Uqla al-Mustawfis, this was the first place of divine manifestation, and inside it, the light of the essence flows. The cloud is an intermediate realm between non-existence and existence, where the forms and images pass from potentiality to actuality. It is a fixed reality, or outwardly is a static reality, this cloud, but inwardly is dynamic. Inside the cloud, there is air and the wind rushes between agitation and calm. If I may bring an extra, or if I had to bring an extra Islamic example of this image, I would recall Meister Eckhart, the German mystic from 13th, 14th century. And I would recall his concepts of bullitio and ebullitio, which is bullitio is boiling and ebullitio boiling over. And he employs these two terms to explain the dynamics of the three persons of the Trinity. The Father eternally begets the Son, who is called the Truth by Meister Eckhart, and both Father and Son exhale the Holy Spirit, which is also called love. The first one is the emanation as an inner boiling, an internal dynamism that doesn't result in a new created being. But the second one, the ebullitio, boiling over, is an outflowing of God existence in, as the external and creative flow of the divine. God possesses existence and good in such an overwhelming way that it has the necessity, so to speak, of letting it flow out. Both in Eckhart and in Ibn Arabi, the priority of ebullitio before ebullitio, the ebullitio would correspond to the creation of forms inside the cloud, must not be understood in a chronological way, because time does not exist in this stage of creation. And also the divine realm is not affected by time or space. So it's another kind of priority. Inside the cloud, that in philosophical terms would correspond to the prime matter, is found the absolute imagination and the supreme barzakh. And it is the container of the immutable essences, Ayan Thabita. By the way, I have to thank, I don't want to miss this, I want to thank my friend Francisco Martinez, who is a scholar of Jacob Böhme, another German mystic, for suggesting this idea of the bullitio and ebullitio. So returning to the cloud and the Ayan Thabita, inside of the cloud, every being has a proper rank, has properties, and has a relation with God that take place inside that cloud. To Ibn Arabi, that's the meaning of the Quranic statement, not one of us, but has a place or station appointed, which is in 37, Ayah 164. The breath of the All-Merciful is the truth through which creation takes place. God brings creation out of the evil of non-existence into the good of existence, following a classical philosophical idea, no? Considering evil as non-existent or nothingness and good as existence from an ontological point of view. And this expression, the truth through which the world is created, can be traced back to the Andalusian master Ibn Barrajan from Sevilla, who was not a direct master of Ibn Arabi, but Ibn Arabi studied his tafsir, his exegesis in Tunisia with another master, Al-Mahdawi. And Ibn Barrajan uses this expression in his Quranic commentary, Al-Haq, Al-Makhluq bihi Al-Alam, the truth by which the world is created, or al-haq, al-haq al-makhluq bihi as-samawat wal-ard, the truth by which heavens and earth are created. And this idea had already probably appeared in the works attributed to Ibn Masarra, another master older than Ibn Arabi, and Ibn Barrajan from a previous generation. When speaking of the letter Ha, he explained that it represents al-haq, the truth or reality with which God creates the heaven and the earth, this intermediate tool. This idea, based on the Quranic, some Quranic ayahs, such as 10:15, 15:85, which imply that the haq is kind of an instrument of God in creation, would find a significant echo in Ibn Arabi's text. The haq is also understood as something that ensues, ka'in. There are a lot of discussions toward the meaning of haq, which designated in the first Quranic exegesis the action of God, of God in the world. In Ibn Barrajan, it is identified with so many concepts such as justice, such as the Quran itself, but we will remark that he also identifies it with the cloud. So we have the breath is the cloud and is al-haq also. As Ibn Arabi states, the cloud is the truth through whom takes place the creation of everything. It is called the real since it is identical with the breath, and the breath is hidden within the breather. So this is what one understands from breath. Hence, the breath has the property of non-manifest, but when it becomes manifest, it has the property of the manifest. And this takes us to another interesting aspect of the breathing of the one who breathes, God, a human being, which is the batin becoming dhahir. The breath is the hidden becoming manifest or visible. The manifest aspect of something is not a thing that can be added to a hidden thing. Hidden and manifest are not two separate things, but they are the same entity. There's like the breath, it's kind of this makes this movement or something that is hidden becoming manifest. 14th century commentarists or an Akbarian commentarist of Ibn Arabi, Qashani, defines nafas as the relief of recreation, tarwih, of the hearts with graces from the hidden. And this means for the lover having intimacy with the beloved. Also, this nafas is the spirit sent from God over the fire of the heart, which is burning in desire to relieve it with its cool quietness. As for the Nafas Rahmani, he says that it is the relational existence between oneness and multiplicity, and it releases the anguish or distress of the names contained inside the surrounding limits of Rahman. He calls these names the Asma Dakhiliya, like inner names that before creation they are like in a distressed mood inside the essence of God. So like the human being is released from anguish and distress when he breathes, God through his breath leave free these names. The rest of these names flow out from his essence. This again reminds me of the Eckhart's ebullitio, letting flow, the divine essence. God exhales his breath from his heart, and it expands itself in the void, creating something, just like the human breath expands itself in space, creating also something, speech. God's breath creates the ranks in which the universe is arranged. But these ranks, maratib, do not imply hierarchy. These are the order that follow all the created beings in the universe. It has more to do with order than hierarchy, and it is very important because this order is what made the universe intelligible, understandable. The ranks in which the world is ordered has to do with the location of the articulation points of the letters in the human body. There is a mirroring of the disposition of the immutable entities in the breath of the all-merciful and the location of the points of articulation in the vocal organs of human beings. So everything that takes place here is taking place there in the breath of the all-merciful. And this is alluded in the Quranic ayah, you threw not when you threw, but Allah threw. God has granted the human being the ability to speak rationally as its most important feature, creating 28 points of articulation corresponding to the 28 lunar mansions, where his breath stops and where the letters are generated. But again, he recalls us that the letters may be multiple, but the breath is one. So it's again a way of illustrating the multiplicity inside of the unity. The organization of the letters, guttural, intermediate, and labial, correspond to the three realms of the hidden, the barzakh, and the manifest. And microcosmically would correspond to intellect, imagination, and senses. When the breath moves from the deepest letter generated in chest, which is ha, to the latest generated in the lips, the wow, it collects or adopts all the properties of every letter by whose point of articulation it passes. So the last letter, the wow, would have all of the rest, the powers of the rest of the letters, because it is the last one. And the ha operates with a lesser strength, taking into account that it is the first letter and it hasn't went through all of the way to get the properties of all the letters that we articulate. So the word hua, which starts with a wa and ends with a wow, hua, which means he, has all the properties of the words, and the huwiya, the ipseiti, is the most supreme being. The wow, the letter wow, is the final goal when the breath goes out of the chest. And in analogy with this scheme, the human being, as the last of God's creatures and the goal of creation, also encompasses all the previous creation within it. Just like the wow encompasses all the letters or the previous letters. Ibn Arabi refers to God as mutakallim, the one who speaks, the one who has a kalam. This name is not in the canonical lists of divine names. And he understands the creation as God's speech, an incessant speech that recreates and keeps creation alive. It is, Ibn Arabi tells us, a divine extension of aid, an extended hand. Related with the idea of extension, Ibn Arabi states also in Futuhat that the alif, the waw, and the ya, which are the prolongations of the three vowels in Arabic, are the closest letter to the breath and are particularly engaged with the continuous creation. We have already mentioned the agitation inside the cloud, the winds that produce soft and strong letters. And we could say that the prototypes of letters, human letters, are to be found inside the cloud, as the rest of beings are represented also inside the clouds by the ayan thabita. Actually, Ibn Arabi talks about the ayan al-huruf, the entities of the letters. And he says that in this cloud, breezes that correspond to the hamza letters or thunders that correspond to vowels are moving up and down. The different creatures of the universe being words of God is particularly inspired by the Quranic ayah, the Messiah, Jesus son of Mary, also a messenger of Allah, and his word which he conveyed unto Mary. But what is the nature of these divine words and letters? Ibn Arabi tells us that we only can speculate about human, not human letter, nature letters, because they are the only ones we have been given information about. Animals, plants, and minerals have been given a way to express their way to God that only Gnostics can perceive. And beyond those 28 letters of the alphabet, there are other natural letters located for human and animals, located as subdivision of those 28 lunar mansions. These letters can reach, in the case of animals, the number of 77. He says that they have a subtle correspondence in the starless spheres, the letters, which is the ceiling of paradise. And it is through these letters that God's speech to the people of paradise, God's speech to the people of paradise is produced. That is, through these ideal or archetypal letters, God talks directly to the people in paradise. The physically articulable letters are in the same sphere, but God has made them more subtle and pleasing than the usual form of verbal expression of the servants. Regarding the sound of divine speech, Ibn Arabi tells us that Muhammad compared the sound of revelation with the noise of a chain on a tract, on a rock, and that was regarding to him as a painful noise. Well, we have also the example of the men of breaths, to whom we'll return later. These men of breath, who are a category of spiritual people, receive inspiration. It comes in a soft melody or a bell, soft bell sound. Ibn Arabi refers to the direct speech of God to the human beings in the imaginal realm as the Fahwaniya, a concept not extensively developed in Ibn Arabi's work. And this Fahwaniya is also identified with the word of the presence, that it is the imperative of creation, the bi, kun. And he has a treatise on Fahwaniya, but it's a very a cryptic treatise. And on a first reading, one doesn't find there the description of what Fahwaniya is, but it deals more with the meaning of the manzil and the manazil of the Quran related to the spiritual states of the Gnostic. Through which this kun, this imperative word, the one addresses the immutable entities in their state of immutability, and he brings them into existence. The Fahwaniya can also be heard by the Gnostic. When a person descends into the spiritual station of mutual encounter and discourse, he sees nothing but forms. From them, the servant apprehends the realities and mysteries, so these forms become spokesmen or interpreters for him. They are the languages of the Fahwaniya. So it can be understood not an oral speech, but a translinguistic and symbolic way of communicating. As it is known, Ibn Arabi developed intricate doctrines about the meaning of the letters and their correspondence with the cosmos, and devoted pages and pages in Futuhat and in other treatises. In Mawaqi' al-Nujum, the Twilight of the Stars, when Ibn Arabi refers to the charism of the hearing, he explains that when the mystic reaches this degree, the degree of hearing, having the karama of hearing, he doesn't see anything in the universe that doesn't praise God with an identic language that of the human. But the beginners, the muridin, the aspirants in the way of God, only imagine the language of the inanimate beings. In the chapter devoted to the tongue, he states that the tongue is the pen of the heart, the qalam of the heart, And the attribute of power writes with it according to what the attribute of will dictates to it, and they write on the manifest parchment of the universe. The servant, Ibn Arabi tells us, is the place of the dictation of the good and the bad according to the law, being tables of confirmation and abrogation. But considering God as mutakallim, he also it implies that he also praises himself. God makes a dhikr of himself. When quoting the hadith of the hidden treasure, it was a hidden treasure, and I love to be known, so that's why I created a creation. So probably I'm not quoting it literally. Ibn Arabi explains that love cannot extend itself, cannot be applied to things that doesn't exist. So that's why he created the world, so he could love, who could express his love and be able to extend his love over the creatures. When he did so by means of his breath, he recognized himself as a manifest, Vahir, and he made a praise, a litany. He made a dhikr of himself. That universal and incessant dhikr that synthesizes the existence is the cloud. And in that dhikr are synthesized to all of the words that throughout the existence of the universe become analytic. So we have like a synthetical discourse or synthetical dhikr inside of the cloud, and an analytic discourse or analytic words and dhikr, divine dhikr, in the phenomenal world. The air inhaled or inspired is interpreted as wind, rih, whilst bukhar is this vapor or that produces the cloud that we have talked about. This rih often carries a perfume with a metaphoric and metaphysical sense. There is a spiritual group of Gnostics called the Men of the Winds, Rijal al-Rih, that recognize the inner intention of people through their sense of smell, among which is to be found the master Abdelkader al-Ghilani, this Iranian master from the 12th century. Ibn Arabi reflects on the relationship between the air that carries the scent of the beloved, discussing this classical topic in Arabic literature. He makes a long digression on chapter 198, discussing a poem, a love poem from a poet from Valencia, which deals on the scent of the beloved, a beloved called Zainab. And the poet wonders if the scent that he perceives that carried by the wind comes from the necklace of Zainab, his clothes, the garden from which the wind has also passed by. And finally, he says that the real lover never attribute the scent to his beloved to none other than the breath of the beloved herself or himself, not the garden or the perfume or the clothes. And this connects the breath and the winds with the idea of love. On chapter 178, when talking about the love of the soul, of the human soul toward God, and bearing in mind, again, the hadith of the hidden treasure, he says that the soul gets to know that the lover, his lover, has, she is the lover, and God is also a lover because he loved the creation, breathes, or sighs, which is tanaffasa. It is to be found in this breath, or it finds, sorry, in this breath, the delectation or relief he wants. So the act of sighing is a typical feature of someone who is in love, the weeping or sighing. This breath escapes from the source of his love through the creatures, making himself known to them. The love we have towards him must be found in the audition and not in the vision, because he addressed us in the cloud when we were Ayanthabita through the word be. So he addressed to us by a spoken word, not by an image or a vision. This existential word is like a heartwarming melody by which we are moved and through which we love our creator. Ibn Arabi states that among the different kinds of lovers, divine lovers, are to be found the Gnostics, no? Are to be found the ones who often sigh. And here he uses a specific term for that, which is awuh. And he is basing upon the Quran the quotation. The ayah, Abraham was soft of heart, long suffering. Awuh, this awuh, which is translated by most of versions of the Quran as long suffering or weeping, means that, no, that sighing or saying ah, it's this an onomatopoeia of the sigh. The man of breaths alluded in chapter 73 of Futuhat is one of the names given to us to the esoteric hierarchy of spiritual men and women present in the world in every age in the same number, together with the seven Abdal, the four pillars. There is an esoteric hierarchy that it's new, and in every age, they are always there ruling the community of Gnostics, and they exist in the same number, each group. These men of the breaths, who are below the lowest, are 21 men who are aware of the divine breath, but don't perceive their own breath. Another group called people of the merciful divine, Ilahiyun Rahmaniyun, that hears the divine inspiration as the noise of a chain or a bell, would be related with this importance of the audition in the when it comes to talks about the breath or the speech of God. One single person that in each breath pivots between the knowledge of his Lord and the knowledge of his essence. These people of the Ilahiyun Rahmaniyun, it is one at every, it is not a group, it's a single person that exists in every age. And his with each one of his breaths, he's between the knowledge of his Lord and the knowledge of his essence, you know, like moving like this, you know, constantly changing from a station to the one station to the other one. We have also an interesting allusion to the knowledge of the world of the breaths in chapter 15 from Futuhat, that put in relation again the breath or the ability to be aware of God's breath and the esoteric Sufi community. This is called by Ibn Arabi the highest degree in Sufi sanctity, the aqtab, the qutb, the axis or pivot. He doesn't develop the relation with the breath. Only the first lines of the chapter talks about this. But he quotes in the beginning of this chapter the hadith of the wind from Yemen that I was talking about in the beginning of the talk. This wind from Yemen that relieved Muhammad from his suffering, and its identification with the breath, the All Merciful, stating that the breath are the sense of divine proximity. When the gnosis, he says, of the Gnostics catch a scent of these breaths, prayers multiply on their parts, calling out in search of the ones who verify for himself, referring to the qutb, to the pole, and has firm stance in that station, who will announce them the most precious scents that precious pearls that this scent brings, which are profound mysteries and knowing. So we could say that the breath has, according to what we have seen, has both an ontological value as well as an epistemological one, and carries within the changing forms of the divine language. It is also the announcement of the presence of the beloved. It's like a herald. And it is the distinctive sign, the distinctive features of the real lovers. And I would like to end quoting a verse from Tarjuman al-Ashwaq, the interpreter of the divine, the desires, the burning desires, that says in the translation of Nicholson, the east wind it is referring to the east wind, which brings news from divine proximity. He says, the one you love is between your ribs. The breaths toss him from side to side. Thank you.